Atlantis, The Dark Continent. A book by Paul Williamson and Linda Braithwaite. Read by JP on Wolf Spirit Radio. Atlantis, The Dark Continent. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. I am back in the college at the university and our final exams are approaching. To make sure I can sort out my rivals satisfactorily, I begin to work on my fellow classmates. Some are fairly close to me academically, so I need to make sure they do not better me in the exams themselves. I practice implanting thoughts into their minds. Little things at first, like forgetting to go to meals and not remembering where their room is situated. Visualizing the person concerned, I formulate the thoughts I wish them to have. Then I concentrate, channel the energy into the sphere, and release it. It is so easy, so ridiculously easy. I have even made one girl who does not drink go out and get really drunk. The day before the exams themselves, I program my fellow students. Some will forget key facts. Some will simply sleep in and be downgraded for that. Some will feel ill and either not come or have to leave early. I need to be careful and make things look as natural as possible. I've also worked on Sheeran, for he is my closest rival. I have tried to make him forget small details. But he is a difficult one. I could feel resistance almost as if he knew something was going on. I'll have to watch him carefully. Now the exams are over. I have graduated with high honours, top of our year. Sheeran came close, very close, but none of the others were near. I have, as is customary, been awarded a senior tutorial position. My mother is delighted and very proud. Now I must concentrate on becoming head of the faculty. That is my next step. It will not be difficult to arrange, but I must wait. I must be patient and make things look normal. Last night I dreamt of the old man, Arad. He was standing in my room, staring at me. Leaning over the edge of my bed, he looked so real. He was angry and told me I was abusing the sphere. It should not be used for manipulating other people's minds. This practice was evil, and I would be cursed for what I was doing. Feeling disturbed, I just turned away and he vanished. It was a bad dream, and surely would not harm me. It is later. I have been on an expedition to the west of the mountains. I was in charge, but Sheeran came along. We became lovers. He is passionate and ambitious like me, and perhaps it will be better being with him more closely. At least then I know his movements. But I also feel I could like him. He's a strong person. I like that. I have just returned to my office at the college and I am seething with rage. I have just been to see the head of our department. He is an old and revolting man. He started trying to kiss me and fondle me sexually. I managed to fight him off. He's disgusting. I will deal with him and end this problem now. With great deliberation, I put the sphere on the table in front of me, visualize his image and allow the power to flow. I implant feelings of utter despair and depression, leading to thoughts of suicide. If this works and he dies, I will get his post. A few days later, I hear that he has jumped to his death from a high tower, and I feel delighted. Then I hear also with horror that I have a rival for the senior post, another woman. I will have to deal with her too. Again, I use the sphere. I implant thoughts in her mind. She goes out for a swim in a flooded river. I implant thoughts in her mind. She goes out to swim in a flooded river and is drowned. It's easy. Now all I need to do is influence the members of the appointing committee to vote for me, and the position is mine. Now, I have been head of the Department of Archaeology for some time, and I have many people under me. I have invited a woman lecturer to my office to see me. She is causing me problems and becoming much too popular, making me look bad. I sense she is a dangerous rival and a threat to my position. Most of the staff prefer her to me, so I need to keep her under control. She's sitting in front of me, and we have been talking. The discussion has become very heated. It's plain she doesn't like me. That essentially doesn't bother me. But the fact she is popular and influencing others against me does. She says I should be more caring and show my feelings towards my colleagues and students, calling me a cold fish and heartless. This enrages me. I stand up and walk around the desk to face her. She stands there defiant and smiling. I hate her. Grabbing a large metal candlestick, I hit her over the head with it. She falls and lays unconscious, blood trickling from a wound on her temple. I stand, regaining my temper and my breath. A strange but very satisfying sense of power and control surges through me. I like it. I have ultimate control. I decide whether she lives or dies. This is my real power. This is energy. Slowly, I get a knife from my drawer in the desk, come back and stand over her prostrate form. I decide to kill her. It is so easy. I cut the sides of her neck and watch as she slowly bleeds to death. It is later. I have discovered that Roland, the head keeper of artifacts, is involved in a black market of valuable antiquities, selling off items in his care through a network of dealers. There are quite a few people involved, and there is money to be made easily. I need to control this, and I can do so with ease. They are fools. As I confront him in my office, he laughs at me and says he knows about my activities too, and if I say anything, he will also. He is dangerous but can be manipulated. I know where they meet, so I tune into them with the sphere. I watch and wait. I will teach them to threaten me. Slowly, I concentrate his image in the amethyst, and I send him pain, agonizing pain. He starts to moan and clutch at his head. The others look around, uncertain and wondering what is happening. He collapses unconscious. I will not kill him this time. I just want to frighten him, so I can control his activities. It is some months later. I am away on another expedition, and I check what he was doing. As I thought, he is spreading rumors about me and stirring up trouble. The fool thinks I'm too far away to either hear him or do anything about it. How wrong he is. Once again, I tune in from where I am, and I send the pain. This time, I will not hold back. I continue till he dies in agony. I am sitting in my special room, which is hidden behind my main office in the college and is quite secret. This is my own place. In front of me, tied to a stone column, is a young woman. I am watching her die. It gives me a sense of pleasure to do this, and I've done it so many times now. I use the sphere to influence the minds of my victims to lure them here. Some are students, some people from the town, and I am always careful to choose the ones no one will miss for a while, and ones whose disappearance is easily explained. With these activities, I feel elation and excitement, especially if they are young women. I am jealous of them, so killing them in this way is very satisfying. Usually, I secure them and then cut them in such a way that they slowly bleed to death. The blood fascinates me. I watch with almost hypnotic intensity as it runs down their bodies. I've lost count of the number I have killed. It doesn't matter anyway. It makes me feel powerful and dominant. Using the sphere also to make others remove the bodies, I program them to forget what they see and do. So it is simple to keep my activities secret. Even Shirin cannot guess anything of this. For some time, I suppose I have realized that Shirin has been seeing other women. I could accept this to a degree, for it kept him out of my way, and I could pursue my own activities more easily. But I have just found out that he is besotted with a young, silly student. Over a period of time, he has been seeing her regularly, not just the odd once like the others. This seems much more serious. Shirin and I have been together 10 years. How could he? I hate him for this. Today I have discovered that he has had her in our bed, and he refuses to be there with me. I will punish them both for this. I am seething with jealousy and anger. My hands shake as I remove the sphere. My hands shake as I remove the sphere from its cloth bag and place it on my desk. I tune into them. They are in bed together. I concentrate on her to kill her. I send pain. She will not do this to me. Soon she starts to hold her head and moan, and then begins to scream and scream, writhing around in agony. That is good. Eventually, after some minutes, she collapses. I know she is dead. I feel relief and satisfaction. Shirin is looking around. Somehow, I feel he knows what has happened. How does he know? I will do the same thing to him. I try to send the energy, but to my horror, I find he has put up strong mental shields. He must know. How has he found out? I must go and kill him myself. It is late, after midnight. I am in our quarters. There is a dim light from a single candle in a wall bracket. Quietly, I move through the main room and into the bed area. He is asleep. I will kill him while he sleeps. I have the knife in my hand. As silently as I can, I go across and stand by the bed. He's not aware of me. As I watch his face, I hesitate. My emotions are overwhelming me with fear. I hate him, and yet I still feel a deep love for him. Feeling so confused, I waver and realize I do not have the courage to do it. I can't kill him. Suddenly, he stirs, rolls over, and sees me. I have left it too late. He becomes aware of the knife, leaps up and grabs both my arms. We struggle. He is so much stronger than me. Trying to twist the knife out of my hand, I am filled with panic and fear and cannot see for tears. Wrenching myself away with all my strength, my hand breaks free and slips downwards. The knife plunges into his stomach and he doubles up, falling to the floor bleeding. I stagger back, horrified. He goes still. I am not sure if he's dead or not. In a panic, I stab him again and again. It is a few days after the death rites for Shirin, and I am sitting in my office feeling desolate. I miss him terribly, and realize now with deep sadness that I loved him very much, and now have killed him. I have no friends, and know I am hated by both my colleagues and the students. There is no one for me, and I feel desperately empty inside. I have been writing my resignation. The paper is on the desk. Next to it is the amethyst. Looking at my reflection in the mirror, I see a bitter and lonely woman. My own eyes stare back at me with deep, deep sadness, and I feel tears slowly running down my cheeks. I don't bother to wipe them away. Suddenly, flooding back into my mind the memories of my childhood. Somewhere inside me is that caring little girl who loved the birds and who was lost all those years ago. Was she really me? What happened? What have I become? The old man, Arad, was right. I am cursed. I think of all the people I have killed and hurt so much, just for my own selfish pleasure and gratification. Feeling wretched, I know there is only one course open to me. Taking a deep breath, I focus my own image into the sphere. I begin to feel intense pain inside my head. It hurts so much, feeling like my head will explode. Is this how the others felt? Is this what I put them through? The pain extends down my spine and throughout my body. I am holding my head and crying, screaming. The pain suddenly increases beyond my endurance. There is a blinding whiteness. Everything goes blank. I am floating. Where am I? I'm confused, disoriented. I can see my body, a crumpled heap on the floor. It's not me anymore. I can't go back. I know I can't go back. I can see the sphere on the table, watching it for a long time. I don't know what to do. What can I do? I'm so alone, so lost. There's no one here, nothing. I feel scared, so very afraid. After what seems like a long time, the room first fades in a grey mist with darker areas of shadow surrounds me. There's nothing here. Reaching out, there is only emptiness. It is like my own heart. I'm so frightened. I need someone to help me. Time just seems not to exist here. Please, someone help me. I become aware of a tiny glimmer of light, so small, like a tiny candle. But from this comes a wonderful feeling of warmth and comfort. Seeing hands reaching for me, I grab desperately for them. Gradually the light brightens. I feel a woman's form slowly drawing me towards her. Holding her very tightly, I don't want her to let me go. Please don't let me go. I don't want to slip back into the shadows. She folds me in her arms and cradles me like a child. Desperately crying, I cling to her. She cradles me for a long, long time. It feels very comforting, having been such a long time since anyone held me. Gradually, I became aware that we are completely surrounded by glorious light. Gently easing me away, I become aware of another presence near. It is Shirin. I can't face him. Sephira, some thoughts in conclusion. Sephira was immensely complex and became an evil person. She was a psychopathic and sadistic killer and was responsible for many, many deaths and much physical suffering. Her darker side came out gradually over the course of my regression work. It was like peeling an onion. The deeper I went, the more tears came. I have found integrating her as part of myself extremely hard. Many of the events and the killings to which I regressed are too dark to write about. I felt her feelings, her pleasure in these dreadful actions. This was incredibly uncomfortable. The amethyst sphere was an integral part of this, in that it allowed her to control other people's minds and bend them to her sadistic will. She used it constantly to manipulate and eventually to torture and kill. It was her constant companion, a valuable tool in her ever-increasing life of sadism and violence. This, of course, was wholly wrong. The amethyst was a healing stone, and its purpose was to help others. She abused its energies in the most evil way possible. During the work I was doing, I found this was not my first encounter with the sphere. I had had it before. In a few previous lives in Atlantis, I had used it for its proper purpose, to accelerate and magnify healing energy from spirit. But as Sophira, it turned totally against that, and used it to hurt and killed. This built up a debt of karma in my soul. I also saw with great reluctance some of those I killed as Sophira were people I know now. One of the hardest to accept was her partner, Shiran, who I am realized with horror for it. Paul. I felt tremendous guilt when I faced him afterwards, and was very ashamed I had hurt him so terribly. Paul and I discussed these events at great length. Clearly, there was a lesson here for me that certainly needed addressing. I felt very bad about what I had done as Sophira, particularly the abuse of the sphere. One day, Paul suggested that while in trance, I should ask for the Earth's forgiveness. What followed is very difficult to describe. It was an amazing sensory experience, hard to put into words. I asked inside me for the Earth to forgive me for what I had done, for the abuse of the amethyst sphere, which was part of the Earth itself. I felt myself going very deep. Then the most incredible feelings swept over me, inside me, and connected with my innermost being. Warmth, love, compassion, forgiveness, and a deep, deep understanding all rolled into one overwhelming sensation. It spiraled around me, and I felt expanded, like I was part of everything, everything that is and was. At once, I felt humbled and elated. It took me some time to come through this. I didn't want to lose it. Gradually, it faded and I came back, feeling relaxed and at ease. I knew my request had been answered, and I knew the experience of pure love, the immensity, the power, the beauty of it. One day, I was out driving along a country road, when a wasp flew in the car. Not liking wasps, I immediately looked for somewhere to pull in and dispose of it. I made use of a craft center car park, and the insect flew out as soon as I opened my doors. The craft center interested me, so I decided to go in and have a brief look round. I wandered idly into a shop that specializes in geological items and fossils. As I looked around, the owner spoke to me and handed me something he had just unpacked. The amethyst sphere sat heavily in my hand, and I was speechless. He was obviously oblivious to my inner turmoil as he spoke about what an excellent specimen it was. All my work with Paul on Sophira's life came into my mind. This was too much of a coincidence. I felt a curious power from it, so I bought it and took it home. At the group meeting the following Friday, I shared my story with the others. Later that same evening, one of our members, Marjorie, channeled her guide, Soja. I asked him about it, and he explained that the globe I had was the same one I had in Atlantis. It had been sent back for me to use properly for healing. It took me some time to come to terms with this incredible sequence of events. I was learning rapidly about the ability of those in spirit to guide and help us. One morning, in my regular meditation, Albani showed me details of the sphere's long journey. I saw it being taken aboard one of the ships fleeing the sinking land. It sailed west across what is now the Caribbean. The vessel sank in a violent storm. I saw the sphere falling into the water, bouncing down an underwater cliff to lay for centuries in the pure white sand. Eventually, it trawled up by some fishermen who sold it. It passed through many hands, finally making its way to England in the craft shop order. I am told by Albany that Sophia was my darkest hour. I certainly felt that way. I still find it hard to accept that my soul did such truly awful things. This makes me feel more determined to follow my path of spirit and healing. This makes me more determined to follow my path of spirit and healing now. Never again do I want to face such terrible events. Such terrible events. The amethyst feels sacred to me, and I want to use it only to channel healing energy and love. Paul's regression as Sheeran. I'm standing in the square of the university, feeling rather content with myself. I feel I am making good progress in my studies, and I want to do well. If I can, I wish to rise in position to a high level. My father has achieved fame, and he has had a significant position within the university, so I want to follow in his footsteps, although not in the same field. My aim is to attain recognition for my intelligence and abilities, which I know are considerable. We are in a group of about 30 students studying archaeology together. There are some whom I regard as rivals, while others are more like friendly acquaintances. I am not particularly close to any of them, feeling that I do not want to become too involved with anyone because this will distract me from my work. There is one woman who I feel I need to keep my eye on. That is Sophia. I feel that Sophia is my main rival. She has a sharp intelligence, and I know that she is every bit as ambitious as I am. It is later now, and I am near the end of my studies. We have travelled a long way across the mountains to dig on the west side of our land. There are many abandoned settlements here with traces of much earlier civilizations that lived on our land. Many relics exist about us, although a lot of them are fragmentary. Much of this area has not been explored by archaeologists, so there are some exciting opportunities for discoveries. I am sure that if I can make a significant find myself, then this will earn me much praise and help with my advancement. For a long time I've been waiting for a chance like this. Other people do not know about my psychic gift, but I can use my inner senses to help me get what I want. It is something I've been able to do since I was a child. When I ask my inner senses for help, then I can feel and know how to achieve my goal. So now I'm putting my intention through my mind to my inner senses for me to find one of these valuable artifacts. I will let my inner senses show me where to look and do this. I have found a vase. This vase is very beautiful and it's whole and complete. Nobody else has found anything as significant as this. I know I will receive accolades for my discovery. The vase is obviously very well worked and shows a high degree of sophistication from its construction. It is very interesting and the teachers with us are very impressed. I notice there is a mixture of reaction amongst the students at my discovery. There are some who appreciate my efforts, the less ambitious ones, I suppose. However, I can sense that my competitors are more envious, and they probably wish that they had found this themselves. But I use my gift for seeing. I knew where I needed to dig in order to find this, and it appeared for me just as I wanted. Now my studies are over, and I am sitting for my final exams. I am finding it difficult to concentrate. Something is interfering in my mind. As I would normally do, I am trying to set my intentions towards achieving excellent results with these exams, getting my inner senses to help me. However, there seems to be a force pushing me off balance. I don't find my usual calm. Somehow I need to learn what this is about, and I feel that there is one way for me to do this. With my thoughts, I ask my inner senses to tell me where this interference is coming from. As I try to still myself, a knowing and a picture slowly come into my mind, I see Sophia. She's the one doing this. I do not know how she was doing it, but she is the one interfering in my mind. I ask now my inner senses to help shield myself from this interference, and my mind is becoming clearer again. However, I do not know how I can apply myself to shield my mind from her intrusions and focus my intentions for the exam at the same time. This is frustrating because I feel like I will not be able to do my best, but I can still try. I feel a mixture of emotions towards Sofira. With her ambition, I am sure she is trying to stop me from beating her, so she can finish top of our year and she will probably succeed. But I wonder how she is managing to interfere in my mind. I wonder how she is managing to interfere in my mind. She must have some great power that she can use. I wonder how she does it. If it is something external that she uses, well, then maybe I could gain access to that power as well. It could help my ambitions enormously. As I think about it, I realize that this is not the first time this interference may have happened. There have been other occasions recently when my mind has also been muddled. I am glad that I have recognized it at last. At least I will be able to shield myself in the future and be alert to this challenge. It is later now, and I have made a deliberate choice to become Sofira's lover. I feel the need that I had to become very close to her so I could find out what she was doing. I cannot say that I feel greatly attracted to her, but the relationship serves a purpose. Through my inner senses, I have been learning more about her thoughts, and now I have discovered the sphere. Secretly, I have tried to use the sphere myself, and it works marvelously. I have to be very careful so Sofira does not find out. By projecting my thoughts into the sphere in the way I would speak to my inner senses, this seems to amplify my intentions and make them stronger, so I can see much more clearly and get the results that I want. Through the sphere, I can see people at a distance and direct thoughts to them. I have not yet wanted to trace Sophia's movements with the sphere. I am afraid that she might sense that somebody is interfering with the sphere and using it without her permission. There are some things about Sofira that make me feel very uneasy. My senses tell me that she is dangerous, but part of me does not dare to learn more. She is a very dominating and forceful personality, and I tend to submit to her wishes and moods rather than challenge her. As time goes on, I more and more try to stay out of her way, and I do at times feel quite afraid of her. We've been together about 3 years, but I really want to escape from her. She does help me gain better positions within the faculty. However, I'm not sure if that is enough. Once or twice I have taken lovers, and I've needed to be very secretive about this because I do not want her to become angry with me. I am very, very afraid of her anger. I sense that she could be very, very jealous. So I try to keep myself quite neutral with her and don't give her any cause to be alarmed by my behavior. It is later now, and I have discovered what she is doing. I had to know, and I feel absolutely sickened and revolted by what I have seen. She is murdering people and enjoying it. I've seen it on a few occasions. She has this room, and she murders people there. She seems to take great delight in murdering young women, but it's not just them, it is others as well. Then I notice afterwards that she comes up, and she has such a smug grin on her face. I sense that these killings give her some form of emotional release and satisfaction. This terrifies me. With what kind of person am I living? I need to get out of this. I need to somehow get untangled from her, or I'm sure it will be the death of me before too long. This woman is wicked and evil. I feel I have to make some excuse so I don't have sex with her anymore. I do not want to be involved with her at all. Perhaps, if I feign that I am not interested for some time, she may just regard that we are drifting apart. I haven't wanted to have sex with her for some considerable time. But I sometimes feel that she forces me. She wants it very much, but I do not, and I know now about my reluctance to do this. There is someone else anyway, someone with whom I feel very much more comfortable to be close and share some love. I don't ever feel love from Safira. I feel that she is wanting to dominate me. Even though I know I'm quite strong in my own right, I don't want to feed energy into her. She gets her sense of power through belittling others, and I don't want to be part of it. It is later. I have been seeing my lover for a considerable... Her name is Anya. She is a little younger than me and has trained as an archaeologist like myself. By being in my office as my assistant, we do much work together upon projects. So it is easy for us to meet and find reasons to be together. I have tried to be very careful not to arouse Safira's suspicions. I just wish she would find someone else so I could be away from her and be free. But I would like to be more open about my relationship with Anya. But I cannot while Safira is still around. I have tried to become more separate from Safira, to encourage her to seek a lover, but she seems uninterested. Safira feels like a monster to me. She even affects my drive to do my work. I do not want to be working in the same department as her. My interest in archaeology has been eroded by the revulsion I feel at what Safira is doing. It makes me question my own motives as well. If I had not been so ambitious, if I had followed my heart more, then I would never have come so much together with... If I had not been so ambitious, if I had followed my heart more, then I would never have come so much together with Safira. If I had been more aware of her motivations instead of letting my own base instincts for power rule me, then maybe I could have freed myself from her long before now. I just hope I haven't left it too late. It is later. I am relaxing together with Anya in the bedroom. It is something we do quite frequently, and we have had a pleasant day together. We've been working, doing some research, sharing our results together. We feel we are making progress. Actually, we are interested in these settlements on the West Coast, and we have been making some catalogues of different articles that have been found there. We have completed quite a substantial section of this today, and I feel satisfied with the results we have achieved. I am feeling happy and assured, but something is disturbing me. My inner senses are agitated. I'm feeling I need to be wary. What is it? My lover, she's screaming. She's upset. I know what it is. It's Safira. It must be. I have to protect myself. Anya is struggling. I cannot help her. She's collapsing. I know she will die. I know she will die, because I have seen it before. Safira does this to people. My inner senses have shown me. She'll turn her attention to me in a moment. I'm sure she will. I must stop her. She must have found out. She must have been watching what I was doing and become suspicious finally. Anya is lying on the floor. She has such a grotesque expression on her face. She has such a grotesque expression on her face and was suffering so much pain. Her chest is not moving and she stopped breathing. I know she is dead. There are waves of energy coming at me as well, but I can block them out. I'm in shock, but I must concentrate on my inner senses and block her out. I must save myself now. There is nothing I can do for my friend. I'm just succeeding. It's a struggle for me, but I'm just succeeding. I feel terrible and my heart is racing. I feel the loss of my friend. I feel panic and I am afraid. I feel sure Safira will try to get me. I feel sure Safira will try to get me. She does this kind of thing. She seeks revenge. Nobody can get anything over her. She won't let them. She won't let me get away with this. Now that she knows I've had a lover, she'll want to kill me. I'm sure my days are numbered. I'll have to find some escape route, and I'll have to be very alert. What can I do to save myself? I'm sure she'll come at me. At least I can tell when she wants to attack me with the sphere. If I keep my guard up, maybe shortly, in a few days, I could find an excuse. Some way of leaving the city, and going somewhere she won't be able to track me down. Even then, I don't know with the spear if I can do this. I'm thinking that there might be only one way I can save myself. If I was to steal the sphere and take it from her, she wouldn't be able to use it anymore. Then I could go and be safe. I think that is what I must do. I must find a way and a time when I could steal the sphere. And I hope that in the meanwhile, my inner senses may just provide enough protection to stop her from becoming another one of her victims. It is night time. I am lying in bed. It is 4 days since Anya died. Even sleeping is something I have been wary of doing in the last few days. When I go to bed in the evenings, I feel the grief of Anya's passing. I feel it now and miss her. She was precious to me and so supportive. I did not ever need to fear her. With Saphira, it is different. I have avoided her, staying out of her way. I hope I have kept the house secure enough so she will not enter. I am still afraid. In the next days, I want to use my senses to find out how I can take the sphere. It may be necessary to wait until after the funeral of my friend. Then there'll be more space. At least, this is what I plan. Something has disturbed me, and I've just opened my eyes. I don't believe it. She's there looking at me. Am I dreaming or what? No, she's there and she has a knife. I'll try not to show that I'm afraid. I must grab the knife from her and protect myself. If I move slowly, if I pretend I'm not too alarmed, then maybe I'll have a chance. I'm grabbing for her now. I'm trying to wrest the knife out of her hand. She is frantic and squirming around. It is hard for me to hold her. She is moving so quickly and has such a strength in her body. I can hardly believe her strength. Oh, I've been stabbed. I feel myself falling to the ground. I feel the life force ebbing. Oh, she's attacking me again. She's not stopping. She's stabbing me. I'm looking down. My body is a complete mess. I see Saphira standing there, and she is shaking. She seems remorseful for having killed me. Perhaps I did mean something to her, after all. I feel myself rising upwards. I need help. It's been a shock, and I feel revolted by what I've had to go through with Saphira. I feel such a lot of negative feelings toward her. Now I feel that there could have been much love between us, but that is clouded by so many negative thoughts and feelings. I find it hard to forgive her for what she has done, not just to me, but to my friend Anya, and all those other people as well. I can see Anya waiting for me. There is someone else, too, a beautiful woman who is my guide. She is wanting to dress my wounds and comfort me. I feel my guide's love. She knows that this has been very distressing for me, what I have experienced now. Her thoughts tell me that it wasn't intended that way in the beginning. However, the way Saphira turned had a great influence. She feels that I have managed to some extent to avoid corruption in my own life then, but feels I could have been more outspoken and honest with Saphira. If I had said to her what I really thought about her activities, it may have changed her, because she could have listened to me. However, because I was afraid and backed away from her, ultimately, this led to my death. It is later now. I am aware that it is the time of Saphira passing over. She is coming, and I know in soul she is very beautiful, and there is a lot of love there for her from me. But I still feel this strong reluctance and repugnance, not wanting to get too close to the personality that she carried in that life. I feel timid, and I am standing somewhat behind my guide to feel protection until I am really ready for this. My friend Anya is also here. I can sense that she feels a similar reluctance to me. Other souls are here too. There is one whose name was Arad, and there were many others. There is a whole collection of souls who met their end through Saphira in that life. I am looking at Saphira. I see great sorrow in her eyes. She is very sad and remorseful. She now realizes what she did and is very sorry. She's asking for my forgiveness. For a moment I hesitate, but then I step towards her. I certainly can forgive her in spirit, and I am glad to have her with me once again. I hope we can all learn from this, that it may help us go forward. But I fear that some great disturbance has taken place through that life, and for many of us, a considerable correction may be needed before a balance can be reached again. During a seminar which I was coordinating, Linda was giving a presentation about her Atlantean past lives, and she was illustrating this with drawings of her experiences that she was able to show. At this time, Linda had only been regressed to a handful of lives from Atlantis, but one of these was her past lifetime as Sephira. During her presentation then, Linda concentrated mainly upon telling about Sephira and one of the other regressions whose character, Angela, was a woman who had poisoned other people. Neither of these lives were particularly pleasant, so I was quite admiring of Linda's capacity to talk about these matters in public. For Lynn, this was the first time she had heard Linda talk in any depth or detail about her regression experiences in Atlantis. Lynn was a science teacher, and although she had done some past life regressions with me, she did not feel that she could have any personal connections with Atlantis. She was open-minded about the existence of Atlantis and curious to hear what Linda had to say, but that was all. From the beginning, when Linda started speaking, Lynn felt nervous and uncomfortable. As Linda proceeded with her talk, Lynn's body reacted in an extreme way. She suffered from an acute chest pain, a severe headache, and her stomach was cramping. Lynn could hardly bear to listen. Afterwards, her symptoms did not disappear, so she arranged to speak with me. Before Linda spoke, Lynn had felt no bodily discomfort. Lynn recognized from her past life regressions with me that the type of sudden headache she had was of the type which manifested when she resisted some imagery or memory that wanted to express itself through her consciousness. But Lynn did not want to admit that she may have some memories of lifetimes on Atlantis. It felt too painful, and she was afraid. However, we both knew her bodily sensations were telling her what her mind did not want to admit. The pains in her body were not shifting. I was aware that the only way for her to release the pain was for her to acknowledge their source truthfully and consent to work with the relevant memories that were associated with this. She agreed to this as I led her into a meditation, and at once the pain began to subside. This was the beginning for Lynn of a series of regressions that took her to past lifetimes in Atlantis. It was a very difficult process for her, but ultimately liberating. In both the lives that Linda talked about, Lynn had her own personal connection. From the Sephira lifetime, Lynn was Anya, Sheeran's lover. In the other lifetime, Lynn's character was a victim of poisoning. No wonder she reacted so strongly. Denise sensed herself as Arad, the old man who showed Sephira the sphere. Denise felt that Arad had spent many years as a recluse, and meeting Sephira was the first human contact he had had for a long time. To be treated so badly by Sephira and killed was a great shock to Arad, and left a wound in Denise's soul, confirming a pattern of belief that for her to open herself to close human contact was dangerous. This is one of many examples of this pattern from lives on Atlantis that Denise has needed to confront. Drawing the threads together. One evening, the four of us, Linda, Denise, Lynn, and myself, were gathered in my flat for a meeting. We were talking about Sephira, and Linda was sharing how she was still very troubled by the memories of this life, particularly how she killed Sheeran. I had recently finished writing my account of my regression to Sheeran, and so I gave this to Linda for her to read. For Linda, this account was quite shocking. She had to stop several times because of the emotions building up inside her. Then, when she reached the point of Sheeran's death, she stopped for several minutes, and her head was down while she silently whimpered. Even though it was very difficult, she knew she had to read this. Finally, she managed to finish. My intuition told me that the process for Linda over this past lifetime was not finished. I needed to do more. Then my attention turned to Lynn. In the previous days, it had been indicated to Lynn through her spiritual guide, Echmael, that it would be beneficial for her to go through a regression to her past life as Anya, Sheeran's lover. Lynn had so far avoided doing this through fear, knowing that it would be likely a very uncomfortable experience. I felt that now would be a good time to approach this. While Linda was present, Lynn reluctantly agreed. Very soon, Lynn was engrossed in her experience as Anya. As Anya, she was a young woman, happy with life, enjoying her position as a researcher working with Sheeran. She felt in awe of Sheeran with his knowledge and capabilities, but she was happy to be close with him. Sheeran confided in Anya how trapped he felt by Safira. And although she was aware of Safira, Anya did not believe that Safira would hurt her or be able to identify her. She enjoyed being Sheeran's lover and was content with that. The death scene was very graphic and emotional. Previously, whenever Linda had talked to Safira, Lynn had felt a pain in the back of her head at the brainstem or medulla oblongata. Linda confirmed to me that this was where she, as Safira, focused the energy when sending energy through her sphere to hurt somebody. As Anya, when she was attacked by Safira, initially Lynn felt in her body a painful surge of energy coming into the back of her head and then spreading upwards into both sides of her head. The pain continued to fill her head as if her head would explode apart, becoming like a pressure that wanted to split her head open. Then she felt this pain going into her heart, and she felt that her physical heart was failing. It was an excruciating pain in the center of her chest. Alongside of this, a further pain went down her spine to other parts of her body. At this point, she collapsed, and Anya died. The pain diminished as her soul became detached from her physical body. It was an awful way to die, and very emotional for Lynn to experience. Later, Anya experienced herself being counseled by her guide about the anger she felt in her chest towards Safira. She was being urged not to turn that anger into hate, and Anya realized that she felt sad for Safira. I asked Lynn if there was anything she wanted to say to Linda about it all. Lynn said that she felt sorry for the things Safira had done. It seemed a shame not to have used the power and energy she had then for good. Lynn perceived that inside Safira there was a beautiful heart and spirit, and that if she had been able to show this, then people could have loved her. Lynn felt then that she bore Linda no anger, malice, or grudges at all. When she came out of trance, Lynn went straight to Linda and they embraced in a flood of tears. It was a very beautiful healing. 2 days later, Linda had a further regression to her life as Safira. This time, she accessed the childhood memories of Safira as a very sensitive girl, wanting to care for birds and heal them, but feeling very isolated and alone. Then, through various events and the influence of her mother, Safira was encouraged to close her feelings down. This she eventually decided to do, and she almost did it completely. Without her feelings operating, she became a murderess. When she killed someone, she felt a sense of absolute control where she felt power. It is only with Sheeran, where she did not feel able to suppress her feelings, that she could not do this. Becoming aware of this sensitive, feeling, loving girl was very healing for Linda. It helped Linda to acknowledge the importance for her to express her feelings in her present life. Also, though, it helped her to know that even with someone as bad as Sophira, at the core of her being, there was love. After this, Linda felt compelled to revise the transcript of Sophira's life she had written to include these missing sections. The experience felt much more whole for her then. Over the days of these regressions, I had been suffering from damage to my sciatic nerve, and I was in a lot of pain and largely immobile. I had been feeling much pain and fear and needed support. Linda was the person able to help me most over this period, and I valued her companionship very much. During these days, I felt the fear and resentment of Shiran towards Sophira melting away. It was a healing for me too. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.